Today is 28th of June, the year 2001. I'm Jeff Charnley, interviewing Dr. Eleanor Huzar for the Michigan State University Oral History Project. This is for the sesquicentennial to be commemorated in the year 2005, coming up. Professor Huzar, you see that we have a tape recorder here, and do you give us permission to tape this session?
Yes.
I'd like to start with something about your personal and educational background. Where were you born and raised, and where did you go to school before college?
I was born and reared in St. Paul, Minnesota, and I went to St. Mark's School and Durham Hall, which was an academy of St. Catherine's College, before going to the University of Minnesota from 1939 to 43. Then I went to Cornell University, took an MA in 1945 and a PhD in 1948.
Were those all in history?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Why did you choose the history as a career?
I simply enjoyed it. I was going to be a doctor, as my whole family were doctors, but I had no talent at all. And I had very much relished my Latin and my ancient history in high school, so I turned back to it and stuck with it.
Did you have a history teacher that was particularly a great influence on you, or
yes, I
sparked,
would say.
Sparked that? Who was that?
Well, it was Sister Mona Riley, taught at Durham Hall and St. Catherine's College. She took her degree under Breasted at Chicago, and mm-hmm. It was exciting.
Mm-hmm. So what field of history were you interested in?
Ancient
history, okay. And what was your dissertation on, or your main research?
The dissertation for the PhD was the relations between the Roman Republic and Egypt from 273 to 31 BC, mm-hmm. when Rome took over Egypt.
Where did you do your research for the dissertation?
At Cornell, basically. Mm-hmm. These were warriors, and you didn't go researching much, so I was at Cornell.
Yeah, it's probably especially in Egypt or in Italy, that's for sure.
I've done it subsequently, but not then.
Mm-hmm. What was your main conclusion of your thesis or your dissertation? Is there any single thing you can
no
point to?
No single thing. It was the emergence of Rome as the international power based on the military and economic forces, but particularly military, and the gradual disintegration of the pharaonic rule, which had been established by Alexander the Great in Egypt, and the Ptolemies lasted until the last one died with Cleopatra.
Mm-hmm. Did you come up with the topic, or was that suggested by your advisor? You remember that?
I can't remember.
Okay.
Probably it was suggested, but I can't remember.
Mm-hmm. How was it that you came to Michigan State?
I was teaching at that time Carleton College in Minnesota, and received an inquiry, was I interested in coming to Michigan State? So I said indeed I was.
Mm-hmm. Had you had contacts with anybody here?
Harry Brown was at Cornell when I was there, and I expect that he was the influential figure there to introduce me at all.
Mm-hmm. Was he chair at the time?
No.
Oh, no, okay. Mm-hmm. So what year did you come here then?
1960.
Mm-hmm. Were there any other historians at the time teaching here ancient history, or?
Richard Sullivan had been filling in, but he wanted to do medieval, and so Walter Fee said it was time for an ancient. Mm-hmm. So I was the first full-time ancient.
Who were some of the other your other colleagues when you first arrived? Not that you have to give a whole laundry list, but
it
was
very,
a large department.
They were very able group. Walter Fee but Madison Kuhn, John Harrison, Harry Brown, Robert Brown.
Was Paul Varg here at that time?
Paul Varg was definitely here. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you reminded me. And Richard and Frederick Williams was here. Mm-hmm. And Alvin Glick in Canadian history.
Were there any other women on the faculty at that time?
Oh, and rightly, you remind me, Marjorie Gessner. Mm-hmm. And Harold Fields, of course, was here too. Mm-hmm. I'm gradually letting these come back to my memory. Mm-hmm. But Marjorie was the only other woman.
Mm-hmm. What was her field?
English history.
English, okay.
And legal history. Mm-hmm. She taught pre-law people in mm-hmm. history.
I ran into her later in her career in the Library of Michigan. She was doing a lot of genealogical research and doing research.
A unique individual. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember anything about when you first arrived? Your impressions of the campus?
Huge. Everyone was very kind, very warm, friendly, and I had no hesitation at all about settling in, and picked up promptly to teach the first courses in ancient history. And then within a year I was teaching graduate group, mm-hmm. and Fee arranged it so I taught a graduate reading course every quarter, mm-hmm. as well as the undergraduate, and the survey at the base. Mm-hmm. So I was teaching the three levels.
What was the teaching load when you first arrived?
9 hours.
9 hours, okay. Mm-hmm. Did you continue with your scholarship, or did it change at all, or after you arrived?
I was into the Roman Republic and Ptolemaic Egypt particularly, mm-hmm. and I had several articles on that, mm-hmm. One place or another, and finally, eventually did a book on Mark Antony.
Mm-hmm. Did, when you mentioned that you did ultimately get to Egypt for research, when was that that you went?
Well, I started in 67, which was my first sabbatical, mm-hmm. and each time I had a sabbatical, I spent it primarily in Rome, at the American Academy in Rome, but always with drifting tours to Greece and Turkey, Syria, Palestine, and Egypt and Algeria. Mm-hmm. So. Sicily, inter alia.
Was there anything about that travel that helped you in your scholarship or understanding the topic?
Oh my!
What? Anything comes to mind? That
no, it's just seeing what you've always read about, and mm-hmm. it's different when you actually see it. And Egypt was one of the places that was still startling to me because it was so much simpler mm-hmm. than the European pictures that we've been seeing regularly, and the mixed religion and the magnificent antiquities, which mm. nothing else is comparable. Mm.
I can imagine the first time you saw them must have been exciting.
Oh, yes.
After studying it for years. And I remember I'd studied the Custer, the Battle of the Little Bighorn, and I always couldn't figure out, because I had an image of the plains, I couldn't figure out how they couldn't see the Indians. Oh. And then once I got there, I saw how it was pitching and rolling, and I could see, yes, you could be easily hidden by the hills. So yeah. That geography and actually being there on the ground is...
Especially when you want to be hidden.
That's true. how would you say, so you had a balance of... In the courses that you taught, you taught both introductory courses,
the freshman survey, and I'd do the ancient Near East through Charlemagne, or perhaps later 12th, 13th century, depending on who else was teaching. Mm-hmm. But that was the freshman survey, and then ancient Near East in the fall, Greece in the winter, mm-hmm. Rome in the spring, mm-hmm. and then the graduate level was 1 year on Greece, the next year on Rome. Mm-hmm.
And at that time, Michigan State was on terms, and did you like that, the length, or would you have preferred a longer time?
I liked that yeah. because it happened to break naturally for me. When I left just when the semesters came in, and when you have a two-year break, you have the ancient Near East, Greece, where do you stop? Mm-hmm. My successor stops with Alexander the Great, but then you start with the Hellenistic world and go on into the Roman world. It's a much less convenient division than the three-way, but it just happened that mm-hmm. that was what was going when I came, and it mm-hmm. worked out well.
Did you see any changes in students over the course of your career?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. What I'm most conscious of is a breakdown in the basic rudimentary familiarity with, say, the English language. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I've taught fill-in twice since I retired. And the last time, last fall, good gracious, even the A students were writing dismaying English. Mm-hmm. One of my pet peeves was that every word which ended in an S mm-hmm. ended in an apostrophe S,
oh, yeah.
which I'm sure you're aware of.
Yes.
ATL.
Yeah, yeah.
Athens, mm-hmm. subject, object, whatever, was mm-hmm. apostrophe S.
Apostrophe S. Yeah.
And, but that was, and it wasn't just the poor students.
Mm-hmm.
It ran through the student body. And when I tell them, now I want you to know ancient history, but you've got to live with your English language all your life, and for your jobs, for your letters, for everything. Complete apathy.
Mm-hmm.
And my sympathies were with ADL.
So in looking at grammar and some of those things, and my own experience too, I had Latin, I had 2 years of Latin, and I had 2 years of French before college. And I don't think some of the students are getting that, or they're not getting the grounding in their language. They're getting more social or cultural things, like they're eating French bread instead of declining verbs in French.
I don't know why.
Yeah.
Whether they're just not reading much, whether it's not being drilled. I was, as I said, in the Catholic schools, and they drilled us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it would never occur to me to put an apostrophe. It was a real possessive. Mm-hmm. So whether it's the drilling, whether it's the lack of reading, and I do think the computers must have some influence, but I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I haven't mm-hmm. studied it enough. But I was still startled this time. And I had taught once before without that much awareness, although I was aware of it, but this time it really hit me hard.
Uh-huh. That's interesting. Did you have many PhD students?
Oh, probably 15.
15? Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Any that went on and that are still teaching today that you have contact?
Uh-huh. Oh, yes. I keep contact with all of them,
mm-hmm.
mostly when we go to the plays in Stratford and on Niagara on the lake
uh-huh.
every summer. I try to get them to come, and so we have
a reunion.
Huh? Reunion. Yes.
Is there anyone teaching in Michigan, or are they spread all over the country?
They're spread all over the country, uh-huh. from Washington, mm-hmm. North Carolina, Texas, and so on. So mm-hmm. I can't tell you specifically.
What was it in terms of the teaching? That what did you like most about teaching?
It's hard to say. I simply loved it. I liked talking about the topic. I enjoyed working out the problems. I had generally very responsive classes. Why, I don't know, but it was a give and take that was vital, and I just enjoyed it. Mm-hmm.
Was there any favorite technique that you used, lecture, discussion?
It was lecture. I taught classes in the freshman survey, it might be 300 to 500. In the 300 level, it was always well over 100.
100 to?
And, you know, up to 150, 180. And then in the graduate course, it would be 10, 12, 15. So as long as you have 100 students, you're lecturing. But when it gets to the small graduate course, then it's give and take. It's quite a different.
Did you have any particular favorite assignment that you'd give in this? I know it's hard. How do you get the students in a 500 enrolled class? How do you get them involved in the subject? Was there any favorite assignment that you gave them?
No. Oh. It's time you started learning, now learn. you know, I was blessed with graduate assistants at that time. Mm-hmm. They also helped with the discussion sections. And I hope they did more in getting the students to participate.
Did you see over time that students were had less knowledge of the ancient world?
Oh yeah.
As time progressed, they had.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the grade and high schools are doing less with that kind of a survey of history, so they can be more innocent of all of this.
The curriculum, how did that change in history while you were here?
While I was here, I would say stress to current issues, feminism, black history, that kind of thing, but also an internationalism, which is much greater. When I came, we were American and European primarily, which doesn't say there wasn't a Chinese, a Japanese historian. Mr. Fee taught Japanese history, and he got Mr. So in Chinese history and so on. But it's intensified enormously that now you think of Asia, Africa, Latin America as of equal and perhaps greater importance than the old European, which has diminished, I think very regrettably, because we have built on that European tradition, and I don't begrudge the rest of the world, I just don't think we ought to let Europe subside into nothingness. Mm-hmm. But I would say that was the chief changeover that I was aware of.
That's similar to what Dean Sullivan said, an outgrowth of that. You mentioned Marjorie Gessner and other. There were obviously other women in the college. And did you see an increase in the number of women?
Oh yeah.
Faculty members. From the time.
When I came, it was Marjorie always leading me on. who took me to Faculty Women's Association. And we would have an occasional meeting or luncheon or something, and maybe 15, 20 people at most. And it kept growing, but it wasn't just the faculty women, it was happening everywhere. And I don't know how many women are in history now, but I suspect maybe 8, I'm not sure. I haven't counted.
Were you involved in department or college or university committees?
Oh yeah.
In what ways?
Well, I was on the library committee, but and that went on for years. I was, for reasons that are beyond comprehension, I was on the university economics committee, the business committee. Mm-hmm. I became chairman of the business committee now. Why in heaven's name? I don't know anything about this. But yeah, we dealt with things like dormitories and bills and what was going up and what had to be cut out and so on. My most dramatic episode there was like we were having a meeting in the president's Hannah building when there were local riots. I think this had to do with the invasions that were going on. And so as we sat around a big table, in came the students and jumped on the table and danced on the table. And I'm trying to go on with the meeting. And Wilkinson was there. And Wilkinson came and said, I think you might disband the meeting. So we disbanded the meeting, but the kids were there to ask me because I was cheering, and there were news people coming in, so I didn't get away as soon as the others did. And when I came out, everything was locked up tight. So I'm roaming around trying to get out, and then some student that I had in class came up and said, I'll get you out. So he led me out of the back door in the basement. And I was very grateful. But I walked around to the front. And as I came out, up came the police, rows of them. Mm-hmm. Suddenly my sympathies were all with the student. It all quieted down in due course, but that was my most memorable episode there.
Was that after the Cambodian invasion in 1970?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. When they were right on campus.
Yeah.
How would you describe the students at that time, their actions? Or?
Oh, it was okay. Mm-hmm. You know, some of them were kind of silly, but no, it wasn't dreadful in any sense. Mm-hmm. And they weren't out just to shock or destroy. They were protesting. Mm-hmm. Doing, mm-hmm. I thought, quite decently. Except for locking in old ladies.
You were on that committee for quite a while, if you ended up as chair.
Years, yeah.
7 years.
And other committees also for the college and for the university, particularly the college. Mm-hmm. We had things that the dean summoned and we went and talked about the graduate program, talked about reorganization of the dean's office. That kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there were lots of committees.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any dealings with the university presidents or provosts? Either directly or indirectly?
Oh, I'd say probably no. John Hanna, well, the first time I came, there was a reception for new faculty, and I met him. How do you do? How do you do? I never saw him again in any professional way, but every time I met him on campus, he'd say, good morning, Mr. Cesar, how are you this morning? He was fantastic in remembering his faculty. Mm-hmm. It was a great asset. It automatically made you sympathetic. John Hanna. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, I don't think I ever was cheeked by jowl with a president or a provost. Mm-hmm. I knew them perhaps, but I didn't ever. That was of no importance to them.
Well, then they must have valued your experience, because if they kept tapping you for that university, the business committee, Roger Wilkinson.
Habit. Yeah. Habit. He was nice. I was chair of the classical studies program for many years. And
What other departments were involved in that?
Romance and classical languages, mm-hmm. as well as the history and ancient art. Mm-hmm. Paul Deutschen was there in archaeology, so he was appropriate. And so we worked to build up classical studies and archaeology, and actually did a certain amount. I'm afraid it's been diminishing as this sort of field mm-hmm. is diminishing, but okay, mm-hmm. we'll try.
Did you have, did you work for the needy at all, or did he come in? He came toward the end,
right? I'd known him for a number of years, uh-huh. and so we were always friends when he came, and we worked harmoniously. Mm-hmm. But he got into administration primarily. Mm-hmm. But that didn't say he wasn't useful to us.
At what point did you retire?
1990. Mm-hmm. So I simply was 68, time to go. Mm-hmm.
During your career, before you retired, were you involved in local activities at all, or
local
any town and gown things that you did, or?
Not a lot. I am a Catholic, and I would try to do some charity work mm-hmm. for the Catholics. And I started reading for the blind. Maybe 1970, whenever it was, they set up that program. I started reading. They were advertising on the radio that they needed readers, and I thought I can do that.
And was that through the library, or was that on WKAR?
WKAR. What they have is a program that the state gives blind people free radio receivers, and nobody else can have them. And so they can keep them as long as they're alive. And they get this radio station, which used to go from 7 a.m., which was when I was reading, to 10 p.m. But now they start at 9, and I think end at 9 or something like that. 7 days a week. Read the radio, read the newspapers, read the grocery ads, which I do on Tuesdays. read novels. We read a number of newspapers around the state, so that this is supposed to reach at least 200 miles all around, and there are some thousands of people who have access to this. So I think it's a useful service. Mm-hmm. It's a gentle one for.
Never thought about reading, need for reading The Price of Lettuce at Meijer's, but I guess there is.
I'll tell you, without importance to this lecture, that beware of Farmer Jack, that's come in and it wants to take over. Every other store, mm-hmm. We read about 8 a morning, every other store is struggling against the fact that Farmer Jack is trying to undercut them. Mm-hmm. patronage.
Had you had any contact with any of your listeners that you're aware of, or had you remained the anonymous voice reading?
I think I've met one or two mm-hmm. that said they mm-hmm. heard me reading, but it's not been a close mm-hmm. Encounter.
In your retirement, have you done any traveling?
No. I like to travel, mm-hmm. and so I've continued to bum. Mm-hmm.
You've been back to Europe and to Egypt since your early trip?
Yeah. Oh, yes, yes, mm-hmm. yes. And more recently, I'm remarried. I lost my first husband, and I remarried. We've been to Alaska, which is beautiful, Ireland, the Caribbean, So, no complaints.
Seeing the world. You mentioned that since retirement you taught a couple times. Have there been any other things on campus that you've either done or taken advantage of? Or
oh, I take advantage of the wonderful shows, the Horton Center, but also the student productions and the other town theater and music and so on. Mm-hmm. Yes, this is a good place to retire.
Many of the cultural activities, yeah. And the Horton Center in particular.
Yeah.
In thinking about some of your colleagues, you just mentioned that you hadn't thought about some of them in a while. Were there anything that characterized the history department while you were teaching or when you came?
When I came, it was primarily a teaching department, which doesn't say people weren't doing research. Mm-hmm. Somebody like Bob Brown felt passionately about writing, for instance. And Harry Brown was doing very important work on Garfield. And other people were doing serious work with Madison Keane, did the history of animation. But primarily, the interest was in teaching and the students, and nobody compromised with the need to meet those classes and get participation. And I would say that it was a very good teaching department. So far as I'm aware, I never heard complaints. I just heard laudatory